Well, let's begin. I'll just say, this is Daniel Gervais. The date is March 13th, 2013. It's a Wednesday. Could I ask, what is your full name, sir?
Vic Gaetano. Victor Gaetano.
And what is your date and place of birth?
November 20th, 1944, born in Pennsylvania, USA.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about your background, where you grew up, if you moved around a lot?
No, I grew up in Pennsylvania, in northeastern part. A place called Hazleton, which is coal country. Went to school in Philadelphia.
Okay. Could you tell me about your educational background, maybe institutions you've attended or research interests?
Bachelor's of Science in Electrical Engineering at Drexel University, and then went to Lehigh University in Bethlehem, PA, did a master's and PhD in psychology.
Okay, and maybe a little bit about your academic interests at that time or now?
At that time, it was in psychology with an interest in applied psychology, and then primarily in industrial organizational, which I have specialized in since I've been here at St. Mary's.
Right, okay. And what is your current position at St. Mary's?
I am a full professor and chair of the Department of Psychology.
Okay. How did you initially arrive at St. Mary's, and approximately when?
I've been here since 1972. Started in September 1972. How did I get here? When I was looking for a job, wife was pregnant. We wanted to live in the northeastern part of the states, New England, and the eastern part of Canada, and I did a job search and had a number of responses, a number of job interviews, and at that time, Canada seemed very interesting, and the job offer was very good compared to the others I had received in terms of working environment, courses that I teach, salary, just competitive.
And what were your initial impressions when you arrived on campus for the first time?
Well, it was very, very different. You had McNally, you had the Burke Building, which was the old library at that time, the Rice Residence, and they were in the process of finishing Loyola when I came for my job interview. It was just about to be opened, I think, during that period, or it was just opened or about to be opened. It was relatively new, and you had the athletic field, and that was it. So it was a small campus. It was in an urban environment, which where we wanted to be. It was in Halifax, which was, our impressions were very favorable, very positive. And so, all things considered, it seemed like a good place to work, good place to raise a family.
Oh, that's excellent to hear. Can you tell me a little bit about your department when you first arrived compared with where it is now? I know that you were essentially the driving force between establishing the master's and doctoral programs in industrial organizational psychology.
When I came in 72, there would have been about maybe seven people there at that time. The department was expanding. It had just been created, I think, in 66, 67, somewhere around there. The first chairperson was Dr. Jerry Gordon, who had a run-in with the administration, and he eventually left, and he became the founder of the Atlantic Child Guidance Center, which is now absorbed into the IWK. And Jerry passed away, and he was very influential in Nova Scotia psychological circles, and there's a undergraduate award named in his honor, which is administered by the Association of Psychologists of Nova Scotia, which is given out annually to the top-ranking undergraduate person. It's a competitive position. But he had gone, and there was a lot of young people come had been in and they had left for various reasons. And when I came, there were three of us who were hired at the same time, and we all arrived at the same time. Myself, Bob Konopaski, and a person who later became chair but is now but left to pursue a career in medicine, Carl Conrad. And so we were three new people, and there was, who was there at the time? There was Hermegard Lenzer, Jim Darley, and I'm trying to think who else was there. They were the only two I can remember. There was one or two others, and they had just had a situation where there was a member there who had not been given tenure, and he was still there when I was interviewing. So there weren't many people in the department at that time, and it was beginning to grow. And so there may have been only Jim and Hermegard there. And I'm trying to think if there was one more, who it was, but it doesn't jump out at me. And so it would have been us five, or maybe one more, would have been six, and we went from there.
How many students would you have been dealing with at that time?
I think the university as a whole, the enrollment was around 2400.
Wow.
Mostly part-time, some part-timers as well, but mostly part-time. It's about maybe a quarter of the size of what it is today, maybe a quarter to a third the size.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of our classes, we probably would have much less than we have today. Fortunately, psychology did have some large classes, but not as large as they were today. The introductory class still got students from across the university, and then there were some majors and a small number of honors, but it was considerably smaller. But I think proportionately, probably the same proportion as it is today with respect to the university. But given that you only had 2,400 across all the university, the students in psychology would have been much, much, much shorter than they are now.
Mm-hmm. What was the internal drive like to create the master's and doctoral programs in industrial organizational psychology? Was that something that when you arrived they were talking about doing, or was that something that you brought in as an initiative?
No, we brought it in as an initiative. One of the hires we made in that direction was in the 70s. We had made a couple of hires, and more staff had been given in psychology. And right the following the hiring of myself, Bob, and Carl Conrad, I think it was about 2 years later, we hired Phil Street, who's still here, and about the same time, Ken Hill, who's just about to retire. And then the next hire was, he was an eminent applied social psychologist who had interest in psychology, John Chowie Jones, who came in from England, and he came in the would have been in the late 70s, and we worked with him to develop the master's program. And we saw, and at that time, even back at the late 70s, early 80s, there was always concern about if we. How can we establish ourselves as something unique in Halifax, where you had Dalhousie and the Mount, and we couldn't compete with Dalhousie in terms of resources. They were very well established in terms of animal research, cognitive research, experimental psychology. The Mount was developing a niche in terms of lifespan development. And we looked at what resources we had, and we thought that we probably had the expertise to develop a master's program. And in fact, there was there was some encouragement from the university, but probably because at that time there was the master's in astronomy, which was just developed, and the science faculty was, I think, supportive. Although the dean at that time, I don't think, was a particular friend of psychology, Bill Briggio, but we went ahead nonetheless, and the initial proposal, and it's still reflected in the title of the degree, it's a master's of science and applied psychology, and we had two streams at that time. We had master's in IO psychology, and we had one in clinical psychology. And there was, and we did comply with all of the requirements of the MPHEC. They sent down someone to review the program. In fact, it was a very eminent psychologist from McGill, George Ferguson, who did a report on it and said there was both a need for both programs and we had competence to put on both. And so I think our first intake was in 1980 for master's students. I think we took clinical students for a year before we took IO students. And the clinical program stayed in place. There was always a need in the community for clinical psychologists, difficult to get people to move here, and there was always concern, and it's still a dilemma nationally in Canada, as what the appropriate requirements are for a clinical psychologist. And in the 80s and even into the 90s, there was the standard was a master's and some experience was adequate, and that changed where now the Canadian Psychological Association and its different provincial organizations have said you must now have a PhD to practice independently as a psychologist, and so they raised the bar you know, a number of years ago, but still there are people, masters, there are still some provinces, territories where a master's level is the appropriate credential. But back in the late 80s, Dalhousie, their psych department was always experimental. They were, they had an aversion to offering clinical psychology courses, but and there was always a tension between Dalhousie psych department and the professional community about offering that program. And but eventually there was a need for a clinical program, and there were some changes at Dalhousie, and they put on a applied for a clinical program, received approval, but there were a lot of conditions placed on it about community involvement, involvement with the other universities, particularly St. Mary's, and the Mount, in terms of supervising, teaching the courses, and so on. And once that program came into place, and with the changing requirements for the clinical training, plus the fact that in the mid, early to mid 90s, we had people who were primarily responsible for the clinical training and establishing the clinical program had moved away. Two of them had moved to Australia to take up other positions. And we had a choice to make. Did you keep trying to run both programs where each were under-resourced, or did we cease the clinical program because we didn't have any resources at that point? Did we go look for them, or we had resources in IO, and should we move in that direction? And it was a bit contentious, you might expect, but at the end of the day, the decision was made to terminate the clinical stream and continue with IO. And with that decision made, in terms of the hires we made in the early to mid-90s, people were attracted to the fact that there was a graduate program. There was more expertise involved with IO that people were hired. And so we soon had a critical mass by the late 90s, where there's a natural push, and the university at that time had decided that graduate education was an important objective for the university to pursue. The university was encouraging different departments to look at developing graduate programs.
Pardon me.
And we felt this was a natural extension, and we put forward our proposal to MBHEC. And it was received broad support from the community, from other universities, and the MBHEC approved it.
Okay.
So we've had it since when? 2003, I think, MBHEC.
2003, okay.
Thereabouts, yeah.
And what is the graduate experience in IO, Industrial Organizational Psychology at St. Mary's, right now, in the present?
Well, we have about, hard to count because we have some part-time students, but we have about, between the master's and PhD, I would say about 30 students in various stages of completion. We have, to date, and the PhDs take a bit longer to produce, and I think we've produced we've graduated five, with another one, two, three about to graduate this probably summer to complete their work. So we're now in a position where we're graduating one to two PhDs a year, or will be in that position. At the master's level, we take in about six students a year, small program. And the reason it's both it and the PhD are small is that we don't take students unless we can offer support to them for a period of time. We fully support master's level students for 2 years. We then support PhD for 3 years. You need to have a master's as a requirement for admission into the PhD program. Generally, in PhD programs, students first enter for a master's program and then they continue, but there's a selection. Some students opt not to continue. Our master's is a two-year program. It's designed for people who want to go to work or go on to a PhD program. And there's another selection process. They're not just automatically admitted to the PhD, they're admitted to the master's. And some will want to go on to the PhD, and then there's another selection process that they have to go through. So if somebody starts here after their master's, it should take them 5 years to finish the PhD. And we would fully support them for that 5 year period. So we don't have a lot of resources. The university supplies some fellowships, but a lot of our students are very competitive at receiving grant funding from external agencies, so we've been very lucky in that regard. Plus, with respect to both the master's and the PhD program, one of the sources for students, and also in terms of which makes life very nice, is that we are one of the programs that is endorsed by the Canadian Forces there. What they call the personal selection unit, where they have people who are involved in industrial organizational psychology. Both if we do recruiting, we do personal selection, we do training, et cetera, et cetera. And generally, if somebody is in one of those positions, after a number of years, they can apply for postgraduate training. And the Canadian Forces will subsidize them. They're kept on full salary. The forces picks up their tuition, all their moving costs, all their book costs, and everything. So we get, because of the number of IO psychologists we have on staff and our relationship with the CF, there's us and there's Calgary out west, but we are the favored programs for the CF in terms of where they can't. If they select somebody for PG, they can't say you must go to the school, but they strongly urge they will come to us. There are some reasons, for example, if a person has a family, there is sort of an applied program at Carleton where some students will opt to go, but there is a lot of suggestion that you consider going to St. Mary's or you go to Calgary. And so we're on that list. So so we get maybe 1 to 2 master students a year who will come here for 2 years from the CF. We have currently 2 in place right now, finishing the first year. We will have generally the number of PhD students they authorize for PhD. After you get your master's, you have to go back work for about 3-4 years and then they'll let you go off.
Oh, okay.
Again. And for a PhD, and again, that's even more competitive. So we have our last 2 PhD graduates were from the Canadian Forces, and we just accepted one, and he's coming here for starting September. Another PhD start from CF.
Okay.
So that's
excellent.
They're fully subsidized, and so we don't have to worry about funding those. And
yeah.
They're here for 2 years.
And they can focus on their studies as opposed to
yeah.
how they're going to be paying their bills and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that sounds fantastic. Okay. In October 2007, there was a Canadian Association of University Teachers online bulletin. You were quoted as a researcher involved in a study that looked at stress among academics. Is
yep.
that yeah? How do you view St. Mary's efforts to deal with, alleviate stress for faculty? Maybe when you first arrived compared with now, or has there been some significant change there?
Well, I think when I first arrived, there was never any thought about academic jobs being stressful or any concern about it at all. Now there are programs that the university offers, and again, partly because several of our department members are involved in establishing healthy workplaces, healthy workplace programs through the CN Center, and now the university always has, they're more, I think, more concerned about it, not directly involved about individual stress, but in terms of making work life better for individuals. There's also more concern about the stress that students suffer, and more efforts at informing faculty of what stress is like on the part of students. And so there's more opportunities. I mean, it's nothing that is being forced down faculty's throats, but things that may, there are things there that faculty can avail themselves of. For example, on the students' part, when I came here, there was no students' services to speak of in terms of counseling. Maybe there was a part-time counselor, and they did maybe academic advising. Now you have a counseling center which is equipped to deal with students, I think.
Yeah, an individual counselors for.
But stress is particularly now with younger faculty, it's something that is always there because you have, particularly, and you see this mostly with younger women faculty, not to say that it doesn't happen to men, but you have young women. They're in a dual role of raising families. They're in their 30s. Universities are changing where there's still not enough women in place, so that if you need women on committees, there's a lot more involvement or calling upon women to do things, so that there's female representation on different bodies. And so all that service work is in conjunction with teaching the courses, trying to do their research so they will get tenure or to get grants. There's much more pressure now and demands on younger faculty in terms of being productive in research is much greater than it was in the past in terms of what they had to do to secure tenure, secure promotion. And so that produces great deal of stress for the younger faculty in those positions.
Getting pulled in many directions
yeah.
at one time.
And particularly for, I think, female faculty who probably share more stress because they're at home, unless it depends on their relationships with their partners. They may still have to carry a lot of responsibilities outside the university, and that adds to their work stress.
Currently, your research involves the impact of psychological environments on health, safety, and productivity of workers.
Among other things.
Among other things.
I'm pretty eclectic.
Oh, great. Yeah. What do you think, or what do you see, may I ask, as the impact or impacts of psychological environment at St. Mary's, the student faculty level?
I think there's a very good relationship. I mean, we're still, I don't think you can call us a small university anymore, in the way I think of a small university. We're probably a medium-sized place. We've got about 8,000 students, and all told, there's still an opportunity to get to know people, to get to know other faculty members. It's not, you know, like the Aussie, where you've got about 17,000 students and about twice the number of faculty, or more faculty, and you don't know everybody. It's getting, as we've grown, at one point, you know, I would know every faculty member by name and face, and we've had a great deal of turnover in the last 10 years. I think we're about a third of the faculty has changed, or new hires, or replacing retirees, or just growing. And so you get to know some of them, but not as well as I did in the past. I can know everybody. I knew everybody in every department, and but now it's you know, the old fogies like myself, and not so much the young people, unless they happen to be in my department, or people I've happened to work with in one case or another. So, I mean, in that sense, it's changing, and but still, I think there are some things about St. Mary's which are unique. I was president of the Canadian Association of University Teachers for several years, and I was on their executive for about, I don't know, 13 years in different various capacities, and had the opportunity to travel around the country and see other universities. And for whatever reason, we seem to have had fewer problems than most other places. There seems to be nowadays much more respect between the faculty and the administration than there are in other places. In a lot of other places, the administration is seen as the enemy, not to be trusted, not to work with. But I don't see that here. I mean, there are some people who have that idea in their head, but most faculty don't. Most faculty, I think, you know, see the administration as having a legitimate role to play. And but on the other hand, there's also, I think, most people are satisfied that there is a faculty union in place to provide a check on things, and to keep the administration from doing things that aren't appropriate. So I think there's a good working relationship. I think one of the things that both the faculty union and the administration strive for is to maintain a good sense of labor relations between us, both in contract negotiations and also in administering the collective agreement and in trying to make things work. Not that we agree on everything, but I think there is a good working relationship between both parties, and most times when there are differences, we do our best to try and resolve those amicably.
That's encouraging to hear, you know, especially from a student perspective, you know. So what are some of the projects or directions that you see your department taking in the future, going forward? Where would you like to take it?
Well, my days are coming to an end. This is my last year as chair, so it'll be up to the new people and where they want to go with the department. I think in terms of aspirations, they're one of the areas that has grown tremendously is the interest in occupational health and safety. The CN Center is, I think, doing great things. They've just gotten more funding from CN. I think there will be more, perhaps, interest in perhaps even a standalone master's in occupational health, which may be a bit different from IO. That's one thing. The other area where I see some people wanting to move, that there's a small cluster of people in forensic psychology, psycho law, and I think they're looking to see maybe to move that into in the direction of a master's degree at some time. And then what other, excuse me, the other thing which is happening is we have, again, our department is, if you're familiar with psychology, in terms of our orientation and the preponderance of our courses are in what we call the social side, the social science side of psychology. But we do offer programs, courses in the natural sciences side. And we have a couple of faculty members whose main area of research is on the natural side, such as psychophysics or neuropsychology, things like that. And some of our faculty, the science faculty has a Master of Applied Science, and they're involved in that. So there's a growing interest in some of our faculty members who aren't in the IO area in taking on students and becoming part of that Master of Applied Science, where they students can where they can work with graduate students in that area if they concentrate into either neuropsychology or in some cases forensic psychology from the forensic sciences program. So that's where people are going in those directions. I don't think we'll ever reestablish a clinical program. We don't have the resources to do that with Dalhousie offering a PhD. There's no need for it. And there's no evidence for that. We've just about reached, I think, the limits of our growth, given the if the university stays the same, we always could use more faculty because we're probably the largest, I would argue we're the largest department in the university, where courses aren't required. For example, you have a large enrollment in management but in English, but everybody in the university or commerce department has to take one of their courses. Nobody has to take a psychology course. And our enrollments are sky high, and our student to faculty ratio is something like 60 to 1, where the university average is under 20 to 1.
Really? Wow.
And even if you discount large intro courses at the first year, you still only get down to about maybe 40 to 1 in the upper, and our upper level courses are quite heavy. And so we can always use more assistance in that regard. But in terms of new programs, new directions, I would say, we have the PhD in IO, perhaps those master's programs I talked about, or more involvement with the Master of Applied Science program on the part of people in neuropsych. But we certainly could do this. We've asked for more faculty, but given the state of the budget, it's unlikely we'll get it this year. But we have one person retiring at the end of August, Ken Hill, and one of the issues is where do we go in terms of replacing him, what area do we replace him. Ken came, he's sort of a cognitive child psychologist, and he's been moved steadily over his career into different aspects of cognitive, and is an expert in child wayfinding in terms of finding lost kids and search and rescue. And the issue is how do we replace him, or what areas do we search for, and that may help about the direction where the department's going. And we're just initiating discussions on that matter in our department meetings.
Okay. And I guess finally then I would just ask, having come to the sort of small campus and change the face of it, adding prestige, you know. What is your impression now of St. Mary's today? How is the university doing as a sort of living, breathing, fluid organism?
I think it's a great place. I think it's moved in the right direction in a number of areas. I think it still has maintained its emphasis on undergraduate education, but it's also recognized and it's put more resources in the graduate education. It's provided more support for faculty, encouraged more faculty to become involved in research. For now, in terms of if you look at external markers of success, such as how much research money you're getting from external agencies, we've increased that tremendously. There's still a lot of work to be done in terms of expansion of the campus, how different it is today from when I came here, and it's still going to be growing. More buildings, I think, are on the horizon. We're out of classroom space. I mean, I just spent the last couple of days working with the registrar and faculty members trying to get them to move classes around because the times they wanted to teach, there's no classrooms. So there's that problem that we have to confront. But, you know, the whole change is just dramatic. Like, you know, you see, walk in here through the library and the atrium, and there's people working in that. It's a totally different environment. One which I think is more supportive of students, the student work here. It's very nice. I've had the opportunity to go elsewhere in my career and turn around and say, good thing.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Dr. Catano, on behalf of the Patrick Power Library Archives, thank you very much
okay.
for the oral history.
Okay.